Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The cyber station, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is cyberstationusa.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
This is Cyber Station USA, America's unique online experience.
Hi, this is Fred Taylor from Scholars Jazz Club in Boston, inviting you to join me in the Jazz Room with host Joan Watson-Jones. That's Wednesdays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the CyberStationUSA.com radio network.
Hello, welcome to the Jazz Room. I'm your host, Joan Watson-Jones. Thanks for stopping by. Come in, relax, and enjoy great jazz. Each week we present the music of independent jazz artists, as well as those we've grown to love through the years. And yes, of course, the legends. Right now you're listening to Miles Davis on a 1970 recording at the Jazz Workshop in Boston, titled Zimbabwe. This is part two of our interview with promoter Fred Taylor. Fred currently books the Scholars Jazz Club in Boston and has been booking jazz for over 50 years. Fred is part of jazz history. In a while, Fred will tell us about his friendship with Miles Davis and Roy Haynes, Boston's legendary drummer, and much more. Right now, Zimbabwe, Miles Davis. I know Miles had a personality. What was it like working with him?
Miles, Miles, in one sense, you could say he was a lot of different people. He was very short on attention span in terms of, he liked to cut to the chase. Doesn't like to hear any puffery stuff. But my initial meeting with him kind of set our relationship. It was 1967, first date. He was sitting at the bar. Our show started at 9. I came down about 8:45 from my office, which was in the building. And I went up to him. He was sitting at the bar in the workshop, and I went up. I said, "Hi, Miles. I'm Fred Taylor from the club." I could have been talking to the wall. So then I said, "Listen, we start our shows at 9 o'clock. How do you like to run your sets?" So then he turns to me and says, "I came here to play, man." So I looked at him. I said, "We start at 9. We close at 2. You're in charge." And I walked away. Well, he got his band up there at 9 and played his ass off. And at the end of the night, he came up to me and said, "How do you like the band?" I said, "They sound good, but I bet you sound a lot better by Wednesday." He said, "You know, you're right." Well, that little encounter kind of set the relationship of being two guys that weren't baloneying each other. And I'm the only guy he would play for in Boston. And I worked with him totally. And after the clubs and the kicks, and I did concerts with him year after year, and at the Opera House, at the ballroom, at the Hotel Bradford. We did many, many shows. I got a funny story. In 1987, I was at the end of my ability to walk almost. I was had degenerative osteoarthritis, and I tried everything. I knew I was going to have both hips replaced. And I had Miles in at a concert, and he had had one hip replaced, and I was talking to him, asking him what it was like, and we, you know, talked about it. About 8 months later, I had had my surgery, both hips replaced, and I had him coming in to do a concert. I went out to the airport to meet him, and we're walking back to the luggage area, and I said, "Miles, you know, there's something I got to tell you." And he's going, "Oh." I said, "That's taken me a lifetime to be able to say this." And now he's beginning to look at me. I said, "Miles, I am now hipper than you. Two, count 'em, baby, two." Well, he threw his arms around me and in his inimitable fashion said, "You MFU."
Oh, my. Now you had Joe Bucci. Was Joe Bucci local?
From Malden, Mass.
Okay. Now we also have Roy Haynes.
Oh, Roy.
Tell me about Roy, please.
Well, Roy, I think from Dorchester, Roy grew up. He had several brothers. One was a minister, and Vinny was an avid jazz enthusiast. And Vinny was a social worker, I think. And he also was the secretary of the Boston Jazz Society, which was a nice organization that did fundraisers and things. And Roy played the workshop in the early days before he moved to New York. And you know who else was coming in those days? Sonny Carrington, who is the father of Terry Lynn Carrington. Sonny was a sax player himself. He used to bring his young daughter, age 14, 15, into the workshop on, like, Sunday matinees, and she would sit in sometime. Well, I remember with Art Blakey, and I think she sat in once with Roy and drum sets. So I'll tell you, those were, and in those days, every Sunday was a jazz matinee, and that's when people would come in, sit-ins, and it's something that's too bad that went by the boards. But Roy, by the way, I worked with Roy a lot at Scullers. We reunited doing shows at Scullers, and we did his last 90th birthday just this past year, which may be one of the last dates that he will be doing. Yeah. So, and you know, Roy is the history of jazz himself. He played, you name it, he played with Charlie Parker. He played with, everyone you can think of in the world of jazz. You know, a walking jazz history, Roy Haynes. Yeah.
Now, when did you start working Scholars Jazz Club?
That was 1989. Yeah, 1989. It was just a little 40-seat overstuffed lounge when I came in. Wonderful general manager of the hotel, the DoubleTree, at that time, named Mark Fallon. And they wanted to do something to get something going, bring some people in there. And they started with some local jazz. And Sue O'Claire, who's been working, matter of fact, Sue O'Claire, who's a wonderful publicist, she started working with me with that famous Miles Davis comeback in 1981, and Sue and I have worked together ever since. Sue was doing promotion for this new little jazz club, and they were just kind of dragging along, and Sue said, you know, you ought to talk to Fred Taylor. And so one day Mark calls me, said, listen, will you take over this club? I said, well, gee, I'll take care of everything. If you will take over this club. I said, well, okay. I hadn't intended to get back into it, but so I started in 1989, and we gradually built that up. First, my first task was gradually to get rid of the overstuffed chairs and bring in the cafe club chair so we could get more seats. And as we got more seats, I was able to up the quality of the artists that I was bringing in. And as things went along, I finally sold them on a renovation to expand the club and to where it is today. And we just kept building it up and increasing. And I started all their, I instituted their initial website. And I initiated the whole idea of selling tickets online. And I did all the marketing to develop their dinner show concept, brought food and showed them how to bring food into the club with a special menu. So I did not just the booking, I marketed and developed the whole club and brought it along. And so it has become, it's rated as one of the top 10 clubs in the country.
Oh, yeah. And now, do you still produce other concerts, or do you just focus only on... Tell me about all that stuff.
Well, I just got through with... I just did Gregory Porter at the Berkeley Performance Center, and a week ago we did Liz Wright at the Berkeley Performance Center. But over the years, I have, I've done so many concerts, from Boston Garden to Symphony Hall, to in Worcester at the Hanover Theater. And not that I've looked for them, but they're artists that I've worked with that have grown big, and I've followed them and moved to the next step with them. By the way, this past weekend, Diana Ross was at the music hall, the Wang City Center. I promoted her in 1977 at the Wang. It was called the music hall then. And it was an amazing thing. There was a promoter named Danny O'Donovan, who had her for the national tour, and he called me and he said, listen, can you do the promotion for me for Diana Ross? I'm coming into Boston. I said, I'd love to. He said, well, we were supposed to go into Detroit, but they're still finishing the renovation, so we had to move the date up, so I've got to come into Boston in place in 2 weeks. I said, 2 weeks? Really? He said, yeah, look, we know it's about, we got to do it. Well, I put together one of the greatest promotions, I think, of my life. Part of it, I had Diana frolicking with Mayor Kevin White at City Hall Plaza on the afternoon of the show, and we had every TV channel in the city there and every radio station, and we did a press conference after the sound check. I had all the press in the first couple of rooms. Well, we got the most incredible promotion, and then Joyce Gohawick, who used to be the arts reporter on BZ, she saw the first show that Thursday night and it raved about it. Bottom line, not only did we do the 4 days, we had to add a fifth day and sold that out, and it became the best grossing show of the tour. That is one of my happiest stories and experiences of promotion. For once, everything just clicked. And so I had a concert last Saturday night, so I couldn't be overseer, but I went over earlier and left something, and I asked him, I said, if you get a chance, tell Diana Ross, her promoter from 1977, Fred Taylor, said hello.
Now, I hear the word that describes you, and it's part of your legacy, impresario. How do you feel about that word? I'm looking at the look on your face, and I'm going, okay. Tell me about it. Tell me what this means, and...
You know what it means? It means you're a survivor.
There you go.
That's what it means. Impresario is a cover-up word for survivor.
Okay.
Well, I've been bringing, and I'll tell you, one of the things I really enjoy is at Scholars, for instance, when I like to stand outside the door at the end of a show and watch the people coming out and just, you know, getting this feeling. And they keep coming over, oh, keep this music coming. Oh, my God, this is wonderful. And that's what it's been, that I've kept the music and jazz going since 1963. Mm-hmm. So... that's, I guess, the impresario or survivor.
Survivor.
Survivors that I've kept it going all these years.
Okay. I've always just wondered about that word. It's been thrown around so much, and it's always seemed a bit ambiguous to me. So I said, find out.
There's another one. There's icon. You know, icon.
Right.
When you
right.
Call it
right.
Icon. I said, well, I could be a statue. You know.
Now, how has jazz changed through the years? I mean, the music business of jazz.
Well, there's a transition. If you go back to the 30s, the swing era, the big bands, Glenn Miller, Artie Shaw, Les Brown. And then you had the 50s where bebop was the innovation, and that was the new sound. And then what we call straight-ahead jazz, that was that four-beat groove, and your Sonny Stitts, your Charlie Parkers, your Dizzy Gillespies. Then it started to change again towards the mid-70s, fusion. Miles had a lot to do with it, going electric. Bitches Brew was a groundbreaker. And then groups like Forever, Return to Forever, Chick Corea, Johnny Clark. And then there started to be branch things, New Age. On the very edge of jazz, it was sort of a little bit of wallpapery, kind of. And then we've morphed into a smooth jazz, which is a popularizing of a jazz format. And what's happened is straight ahead jazz per se is hard to sell today. The young kids don't know it. Radio doesn't exist practically.
We know.
So where do they hear it, you know? So we're in a transforming period again, and struggling to preserve some of the standard great jazz, mixing it in with the new influences, and now you have worldwide Berkeley, my God, they have students from every corner of the world there. So you're getting influences of music from around the world and jazz interpretations with that music. I just had Jamie Baum and her Septet Plus at Scholars, and she was playing music that she has arranged from India and fusing Indian music and jazz, and we're getting so many of these different, of course, Afro-Cuban and African. Of course, Hugh Masekela introduced a lot of that, but we're getting totally around the world influences, and then we're getting younger jazz musicians. Take Robert Glasper, who is experimenting with hip-hop influences and rap and different rock. So you've got a lot of the younger musicians are experimenting with jazz goes to somewhere else. So I don't know, I mean, jazz is the music of improvisation. And I suppose that's a form of is improvising, that it keeps changing, it keeps finding new paths. So it's for me, I just hope they'll never give up on the classics forms of jazz. Bring in all the new forms and everything, but don't lose the older forms, you know. I oh God,
I know. Yeah. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that one. Well,
you know, I'll tell you an interesting thing that puzzles me. In one sense, there are more young jazz musicians than I've ever seen before, and they are in high schools. They're high school jazz bands. They're all over the place. And in a lot of little suburban restaurants, we'll have little jazz trios and things. And all these young jazz musicians are not attracting their own age groups. And I that's something I can't figure out, why so many young jazz musicians that are playing, yet their contemporaries aren't coming to see them. And I don't know what's missing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about jazz that's, especially when the young people play, because I've heard so many of the young artists come in and they're really into the music.
Yeah.
And the people, the students of their own age, almost are like, what's he doing?
Yeah.
What's going on? I didn't mean listening to so-and-so or whoever's the topmost, you know,
yeah.
Taylor Swift or something like that. And it's just part of the age group.
Well, I think radio has a lot to do with it, the lack of being able to hear music.
Oh, I agree with you.
In an easy
format. And now, thank goodness I'm on the internet only.
Yeah, well,
because you can be found.
Internet, XM, Sirius. I mean, the market is fragmented.
Yes.
And in a sense, there are almost too many outlets. And you don't even know which one. And so you got some people do this one, some people do that one. when we had just terrestrial radio, it was easy. Everybody heard a station, you know. So, and I'll tell you, from the point of view of promoting and advertising, it's become a difficult job. There is no silver bullet anymore. You have to figure out every niche, social media. Matter of fact, today, the artist has to do as much promotion as the club does. It's a 50-50 a responsibility.
Yes, I know. All too well, I know what has to be done. However, what keeps you going?
Music.
Okay.
It's the music. Whenever I'm away from it, I start to get edgy. I gotta have my music fix.
Oh, I understand. I do understand.
And I'll tell you something. I think music is a life form, and I think people in the music business tend to live longer.
No, you're right on that. I totally agree with you on that. I totally agree with you on that.
It's therapeutic.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, there is music therapy.
I know.
Very definitely. Yeah.
I know.
It has, it penetrates deep.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it just sends everything through the system so that you just right. renew yourself.
People, I've seen it with people that have dementia and don't respond, and you play some music that was in their past, something that they would have known, and all of a sudden there's a glimmer, the eyes flicker, there seems to be a smile. It gets into even dementia. People.
There's a part of the brain just for music, though.
Yeah.
There is.
Yeah.
Well, Fred Taylor, I want to thank you so much for giving us all this time in the jazz room.
Okay.
I thoroughly appreciate it. And
well, that's part of my impresario role.
I won't use that word in front of you ever again. I promise.
Okay. Jonah, and listen, you keep doing what you're doing because it's a real service.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This ends part two of our interview with Fred Taylor. You can learn more about him at www.scholarsjazz.com. or htproductions.com. The music you heard in this program were Miles Davis, Zimbabwe, from a 1973 recording at the Jazz Workshop, Boston. Roy Haynes, extended drum solo with the Stan Getz Quartet. Diana Ross, Do You Know Where You're Going To?, from the theme of the movie Mahogany. And Ah Yeah, by the Robert Glasper Experiment, Black Radio, featuring Music Soul Child and Christine Michelle. Thank you for spending time here with us in the Jazz Room. We love hearing from you. You can now find the Jazz Room on Twitter, hashtag at Ms. Jazz Kitty, or you may email me through the Jazz Room page of my website, JoanWatsonJones.com. Until next time, you've been in the Jazz Room. I'm your host, Joan Watson Jones.
we have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyber Station USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The cyber station, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.